Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section here, or sent me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I want to first give a little shout out to those people who have signed up as patrons and are supporting my channel. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate and love every single one of you and the wonderful comments and communications that you've sent me. Of support, and I want to encourage everybody who gets something out of my channel to, you know, if you'd like, give me some support. It's really, really appreciated and will help me to make this even better for everybody. Okay, let's take up your questions. Ray McDonough. I had good friends in the Sea Org. After I left, it was impossible to have any contact with them anymore. Many of them would be getting on in age now, so my question is, what do they do with Sea Org members who become an assisted care problem, or for some reason are too old to be of use? I know they offload them, but surely they don't just kick them into the street, as that would be bad PR. What public assistance would these guys be able to get after a life of almost no wages nor Social Security? What happens to them? My personal experience with this is I have observed Sea Org members who got along in age and could no longer work being put into assisted care living or old folks, you know, retirement homes. And that was paid for by the Sea Org. I did see that happen in a handful of cases. I also saw people get offloaded and in those cases they were some place of residence was assured before they left. They literally were not kicked off into the street. I never saw or heard of that occurring with an old person. Maybe they had family or, you know, Scientology family, something like that, that they could go live with. But more often than not, what I actually saw was them stay on the base until they died. And that happened with a few people. They died on base. They were on part-time schedules or reduced schedules as they got advanced in age. That sort of thing was obviously discouraged in the Sea Org. They wanted people working as much as they could get work out of them. But it was also, you know, there's not a total lack of humanity there with everybody in the Sea Org. Some people knew that these guys were just not up to, you know, doing a schedule more than 4 or 5 hours a day of work. And they would, I'm talking about work like filing or writing letters, this kind of thing, sort of, you know, have them go in the basement and do that kind of basement work. So that's what I observed with that. And just one other note is that I also observed that when people were getting advanced in age from Clearwater, they were sent to Los Angeles because they didn't want anybody in Clearwater dying off on the Clearwater base at Flag because of, you know, Lisa McPherson and all that. They are just like crazy about not having anybody die out there in Clearwater, but it's okay for them to die in Los Angeles. Nobody cares about that. So that's something else I can report on that particular question. Shaka Cohen. I became fascinated with Scientology about 8 years ago. My brother took a few courses in Orange County in the early 80s when he was about 20 years old and still living with my parents. 20 years later, my brother and I grew up, married, had families, etc. Our dad was sick, so I had his mail forwarded to my house. Next thing I knew, on a regular basis, mail, flyers, full-color magazines, and pamphlets began flooding my mailbox, all addressed to my brother. I knew enough to not contact Church Scientology because I'd heard horror stories from friends. I moved to a new home in 2007. My home phone number is not listed, but one day my landline rang and the caller ID said COS. I usually ignore calls, but answered this one. The person asked for my brother. I yelled at the guy that he was creepy for calling me since my brother and I haven't lived in the same house since we were kids. I told him that my number was registered with donotcall.org and that I wasn't interested in his cult. He laughed wryly. I hung up. Here's my question. WTF? How did they manage to get my phone number and why would they even bother? Do they get any people to return this way? What a colossal waste of time and resources. Pretty horrible PR, right? Well, Shaka, the deal is that these guys tracking people down with skip tracing, and they spend a great deal of money investing in online databases and skip tracing services which track people through the mail system and various other ways in order to track down phone numbers and addresses and whatnot. They do that because it is a way for Sea Org members to stay busy, and it's a way for them to potentially make more money. Because if they can even reach one person who used to have anything to do with Scientology and convince them that it's all better now and everything is great and they should invest in Scientology now, then they can make, out of one phone call, a few thousand dollars. And the, you know, David Miscavige considers that a worthwhile investment of time and energy. And so ever since the Basics books, the new Basic books, I think it was 2006, 2007, ever since those were released, that part of every single day is spent by every single Sea Org member calling skip-traced numbers to find people who used to have some involvement with Dianetics and Scientology and get them back in the fold. And that is what they do because they are desperate for new members. And of course, what the Sea Org members who are doing this don't really know is how toxic the word Scientology is in the real world. They don't know about going clear. They don't know about even how the broad effects of Anonymous going all the way back to, you know, 2007, 2008, and the critics and the media and all of that. They are totally unaware of that, or they have very low awareness of it. They don't know how big the problem is, even though they know maybe that there is a problem. And so they're reaching out, and they think that they have found the answer to life, the universe, and everything, and they want everybody else to know. And so they're eager to try to reach people who used to have something to do with it, because they think that if they can reach that person, they can rehabilitate that person's desire to do Scientology, get more money out of them, and get them moving again in Scientology. So it's an honest effort on their part. Honest, I say, in that they, you know, the people who are actually doing the calling really are trying, but the overall effort is really just more money-making nonsense from David Miscavige. So there you go. Cass Carter. Okay, so if Scientology shuts down tomorrow, just goes bankrupt and ruined and completely gone, are you worried that someone would leak PC folders? Would there be legal boundaries or protections to prevent such leaking? There actually are legal protections and boundaries on leaking that information, and the protections are actually stamped with a rubber stamp, literally, right on the folders of every single file that the church keeps. And that stamp says, confidential, confessional, priest, penitent, privileged file, which means that the information in that file has been is supposed to be kept confidential between, as a religious file, between the priest or, you know, confessor and penitent, the person who confessed. And those stamps were actually put on all of those folders. Years ago, they started doing that directly because if the church were raided or, you know, an outside force came into the church to and grabbed up all those files, they legally wouldn't be able to look in them because they're stamped that way. At least that's my understanding of it, and that's why we had to go through with those stamps and stamp every one of those folders and make sure that every new folder we made was stamped that way. So now, of course, the church itself doesn't follow that, and they use the information any way they see fit, and they have contracts which people sign when they go into Scientology that specifically state that those folders are not the property of the individual, they are the property of the church, and the church can do whatever it wants to with them. That's actually in writing now. So if you go into Scientology and sign some of those contracts they have you sign, that's one of the rights you're signing away, is any right to access to your private information. But as far as if the church were to shut down, as far as I know, the legal boundaries or bindings on those folders are still in place. And while the church might not respect those boundaries, I think the FBI or any other government agency or anybody else who went in there would. So I think that information is safe from outside prying eyes. I just don't think it's safe, ironically, from the people who actually have it. Erica Adams. Chris, why can't members see that COB isn't trying to bring new people into the church? Do they truly not see that the buildings are getting bigger, but not anything beyond that is being done? They have to realize that there is no real push to expand C of S. Also, does Dorfon cult go by COB to be more like LRH? Okay, well, the deal is that they actually don't see it. When you're inside the bubble world of Scientology, you are spoon-fed a lot of information that we out in the real world don't actually see. If you don't attend their events, and by their events, I mean those broad international events where Miscavige goes on stage and feeds these guys for hours on end information, false, he just lies about the expansion of Scientology, how good it's doing, the effects it's creating in the world, the positive effects, all of the government leaders and policemen and officials and other people outside of Scientology who will give these PR spots to the church. They'll film them doing these little testimonials about how much the church has helped. And so the Scientologists just eat this stuff up because, of course, they're desperate for good news about Scientology. They're in a frame of mind where they want to believe. And so when you feed somebody who's in that condition information that, you know, allows them to continue to believe, they eat it up. And they don't question too much, and they don't look too closely at the statistics that are shown to them, and they don't do Google searches to do any fact-checking on the information that's given to them. And the reason I say that is because people who do fact-check, people who do question those statistics, end up leaving the church. And now they're like me. They're out. They're gone, you know. And that still happens, of course, with a you know, people trickling out. But those who are still in are in because they are spoon-fed, frankly, a bunch of nonsense. And they buy it. And they don't, and like I said, they don't do anything to unbuy it. As far as COB goes, I think he took on the term COB exactly because it's the LRH. It's in following in the footsteps of LRH. Like so many other things Miscavige does, he just learned from LRH what to do and did it. So that's why he's called COB. Alex Cross. Why is it that most in Scientology feel like they have all the answers to life? More so than the rest of us. Thank you. It's part of any cult belief system to provide answers. That's one of the things that makes a destructive cult destructive is the whole us versus them mentality and you know, the punishments and the mind control and all that. But this question actually is one of the other things that makes a destructive cult, is that it convinces its followers that they don't need to go to any other source or piece of information to have any knowledge that matters. All of the answers to life and living are right there in the cult. And the cult leader is the one who came up with all those answers, and all they have to do is listen to that one guy. And that's one of the signs of a destructive cult. So that's, you know, no different with Scientology. They believe that because they're told that. L. Ron Hubbard did not mince words. He specifically said that Scientology is the one thing senior to life because it encompasses all of life, or it explains all of life. And when you are, you know, being spoon-fed information like that from somebody over and over and over again, and then he and Hubbard varies that in hundreds of different ways all throughout the Scientology materials. You'd have to go through any Scientology book and you'll find that statement stated emphatically or at least implied somewhere in there. And by repetition, people start, who are in that frame of mind of believing L. Ron Hubbard, fall for that. And that's why they believe it. Riley 222. Thank you so much for the highly important effort you put into your channel. I love watching your videos. My question is this. I've heard a lot about the poor conditions and harsh treatment experienced by Sea Org members, for example, in Flag or Int or St. Hill, etc. I've read about the limits on having a cell phone, a car, watching TV, keeping a passport, and so on. But what about Sea Org members who occupy certain positions in local orgs? I've met some of them, and they have cell phones, Facebook pages, and some use cars. Does that mean that these SO members have it better than those at higher orgs? Are they treated less harshly? Are they, too, sleep and food deprived and have heaps of pressure? Some Sea Org members, a select few, are posted in local orgs like Denver or Las Vegas or, you know, Milan or something like that. Orgs that I call local orgs, meaning orgs that are churches of Scientology that are not on the central bases where most of the Sea Org members are. And those are called, those staff members, those Sea Org members who are posted out there are called network staff, because they are out there to do a very specific function at the local org, be a representative of management, and handle financing in the orgs, things like that. So those Sea Org members have a lot more, you could say that they have a lot more leash given to them, because they're out unsupervised, and so they have to supervise themselves. Usually there's more than one of them posted in in the local orgs, and so they keep an eye on each other, and they don't get too out of hand, and and they have daily reports going back and forth between them and the Sea Org bases and their managers to keep them on the rails and keep them focused and give them direction and tell them what to do. And it's mostly the Sea Org members' job there to keep the staff on the rails and producing and keep them going and motivated and that sort of thing. So that's what they're doing there. If they have cell phones, it's pretty much because they're, you know, being in touch with public and out in the real world, you know, it just kind of makes sense to have that versus having a, you know, being on the landline all the time in the modern world. You know, not too many people have that. But I'm willing to bet that most of them don't have data access on those cell phones. They can't just, you know, randomly look at stuff on the internet on those phones. As far as cars, I don't know, there's not really that big of a restriction on cars in the Sea Org. People in the Sea Org on bases do have cars if they can afford it. The main thing is Sea Org members can't afford to have cars because they can't make the insurance payments when they're making less than $50 a week. But as far as Facebook pages go, that's verboten. Any Sea Org member who's got a Facebook page is definitely off the rails. And that's not authorized. That's not something that they're authorized to have, at least not when I was in. It certainly wasn't. There would be no reason for a Sea Org member to have a Facebook page. So that's just, you know, that's a Sea Org member who's abusing his liberties. And he would be, if that sort of thing was found out about, they'd be yanked back to the base for correction and for handling. In other words, sec checking and ethics and punishments and all that sort of thing to get the guy back in line. And he either straightens up and promises to not do that crap anymore, or he doesn't go back out and he's kept on the base and they have to replace him with somebody else who will toe the line and will be able to be trusted, is how they would say it. So they're given a little bit of leash, but they're not given a lot of leash, and they're supervised very closely. So, you know, do they have it better? Yeah, they do. Do they have a better chance of snapping out of it and seeing how things really are? Yes. Do they have a better chance of getting on Google and looking up Scientology stuff? Yes, they do. And of course, I say all that because that's how I did it. I wasn't posted in a local org, but I was out in orgs like that in Twin Cities and Las Vegas and out and about. And that's how I did it. So I certainly know it can happen with other people. And of course, I certainly hope that they do abuse their rights and the liberties and get on Google and find out what's really going on and then, you know, take a hike. Curious onlooker, over the course of your career in the Sea Org, how much of your typical week or month involved indoctrination activities as opposed to working on projects? In other words, how frequent were group meetings, video screenings, or other activities designed to solidify your loyalty to the cause, the group identity, LRH, or Miscavige? Was the volume of indoctrination fairly constant over the years, or were there periods of greater intensity? All right, let me just randomly throw some things out here as they occur to me, and I'll kind of go through my schedule as a Sea Org member. There are daily musters in the morning, where, in other words, gatherings of all the Sea Org members where roll call is taken and, you know, so attendance is noted and people are chased up if they're not there because, let's say, some guy doesn't show up in the morning because he slept in and they go have to go roust him and get him up and that kind of thing. That happens. So there's musters, there's these, you know, formations in the morning, afternoon, after lunch, and after dinner, and then often at the end of the night as well. So there can be 3 to 4 musters every day. At those musters will be announcements and briefings given to keep the troops, you know, up to date on what's going on, give them quotas or targets for income or fundraising, and or orders on what new emergency has come down the line that needs to be handled or dealt with. So that occurs every single day, many times a day. every week there was, in Los Angeles at the Pacifica base, there was a base briefing. All crew had to attend that, and that was a briefing from the senior executives, the captains of the organizations there, and there was a lot of rah-rah and pep talk and stat showing and that sort of thing, or severe reality adjustments, a lot of, you know, some yelling and screaming going on. But for the most part, they tried to not do a lot of yelling and screaming at those group activities unless something really bad had gone down. They tried to keep those things a little bit more chipper and a little bit more, you know, motivating and morale boosting. Then there are the yearly events that occur. And I think there was the New Year's event. There was the March 13th event, which is L. Ron Hubbard's birthday. There's the May 9th event, Celebration of Dianetics. There's the Maiden Voyage events in the summer for the celebration of the Free Winds and its maiden voyage. There was a IAS event in October. There used to be an Auditor's Day event in September, but that kind of faded away. Then there's a New Year's event on New Year's. So that's the cycle of yearly events that occur where they have these gatherings where Chairman of the Board Miscavige goes on stage and briefs for hours on end, and sometimes other people will go on stage too, but mostly it's Miscavige's show, and that's where he gives the latest and greatest on, you know, what's going down in the world of Scientology. And you know, I've come to find out that almost everything that the guy stands there and spews are lies, and that was pretty shocking to realize that, but that's the case, you know. Trumped up, exaggerated statistics that don't mean anything, stories that of events that never happened or are way blown out of proportion as to their importance, you know, things like that. So those kind of events go on, and there's all kinds of standing and sitting and standing and applauding, and you know, it's a very controlled activity, and it keeps the indoctrination solid. And there's a number of them throughout the year. Now. Then as far as that, those are the regular things. Now, as far as meetings and whatnot, when I was in management, man, if there is one thing they love to do in the Sea Org, it is have meetings. We had meetings every day, sometimes two or three times a day. It is fractionally amazing that they get anything done, because there's so much administrative nonsense and bureaucratic just rigmarole that goes on, just hamster wheel kind of activity, that a lot of time is wasted that could be being used for actual production, but they just want to have meetings and yell and scream at people and tell them they haven't gotten enough done. And you know, you wonder why Sea Org members are kept up for all hours and why there's this, you know, this pattern of abuse that goes on. It's because they're not allowed to do their jobs. I mean, it gets pretty frustrating after a while. So that kind of thing goes on. And as far as a concentrated period of time, I will say, well, I was on the RPF. And I was on the RPF for 3 years and 3 months. And that was full-time indoctrination. The RPF is nothing but a cult re-education camp. And I was on that for quite some time until I graduated from it. I actually met the requirements of it and I finished it. And for whatever good reason, I was not fully re-indoctrinated as a cult member after the end of that. That's a subject for another time, but that didn't really have the intended effect on me. And, you know, so here I am. All right, Richard Hole. Chris, what do you think of one who enters Scientology now to get the benefit of the lower end of the bridge and bail before it gets kooky and expensive? Thanks. Honestly, I think that's kind of crazy. The lower end of Scientology is just as kooky as the upper end, and the cult indoctrination starts from the day you walk into an organization. So it's not like you're going to go in there, get something good, and then leave, and they're not going to harass you or call you forever trying to get you back in there and giving them more money. And there is nothing in Scientology that you can get at the lower end that you can't get outside of Scientology without all the cult trappings. I cannot recommend enough that you stay away from them. That's all I really have to say to that. Steve Aldrich. Hi, Chris. When I listen to your videos, you create the impression of being a person that is extremely well-educated with a useful knowledge of many subjects. You don't sound at all like a robot that has been sheltered from reality for years in the fantasy world of LRH's nonsense. In a recent video, you quoted H.L. Mencken. I'd be surprised if anyone else in the Scientology world has even heard of the man. You also recommended Demon Haunted World. I can't imagine anyone actively in the Sea Org discovering that such a book exists, much less reading it. Your videos are succinct and clear. There is no hint of Scientology jargon. How did you acquire such an abundant vocabulary and learn to use it so well? What was your education and experience before joining Scientology? Have you simply voraciously consumed scientific and skeptical material since leaving Scientology? Or did you have a scientific background that was always in the background, even when you were in Scientology? I'm curious about this because you sound so level-headed today that it seems impossible that you, the only you that I've encountered, could have stuck around in Scientology for more than about 2 days before saying, "This is a load of crap and I am out of here." Okay, well, I didn't include that question in here this week as a big ego boost. I actually have a reason for taking this up. My education level was a high school education. I graduated from high school and then I joined staff. I didn't really have any particular science background, more so than anybody else. And I don't have any special education to look back on and go, you know, I was college educated or have a degree or anything like that. I am a voracious reader, and I am a pretty fast study, but other than that, I'm just a regular guy. And I'm making this point because I want people out there to know that I'm not anybody special, and that lots of people who are in Scientology or who have come out of Scientology are very smart people. And it wasn't their smarts that got them in or got them out or whatever, it's a kind of a different thing. And anybody has the potential to learn what I've learned and, you know, move on and have a successful life and be free of all the trappings of the cult. It's a process of educating yourself and purposefully and knowingly flushing the cult language out of your system, as I've said before, and learning what the cult system is and how it works, because it is a system. It's a system of mind control. It's a system of indoctrination. It was done on purpose. It was done with malice aforethought, and it can be gotten free from. And that's really why what my message is about this, is that anybody can get free of this. Anybody can learn what I've learned. The materials are all there. Everything that I talk about in terms of critical thinking and skepticism and reason are mostly things I've learned since I left the cult. Now, I mean, I like to say I'm a bright guy, and I did study a lot of things when I was in Scientology because of the study tech. You have to clear up your words. You have to look up words you don't understand. So I did a lot of that over all those years. I took that very seriously. And that's not a Hubbard invention, by the way, and I'm happy to promote that looking up words in a dictionary that you don't understand, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing evil or indoctrinating about, you know, understanding words better or understanding what you're reading. And I used to spend a lot of time doing that. So, I don't credit Scientology with that. I don't blame Scientology for that. It's just, you know, I'm a really curious person. And I encourage curiosity and skepticism and reason in everybody, because I think that we can all do better for ourselves by doing that. So that's kind of my answer to the question. And so with that, we've come to the end of another critical Q&A episode. And this is, you know, it's been a lot of fun answering these questions. I've got a ton more to take up. I kind of wish I could squeeze more into these half-hour episodes, but only got so much time, and I don't want to take up more than that. So we'll just keep plowing through them, and you keep sending them to me because I love them. I love your feedback. I love your comments. And if you have anything to say about anything I've said here today or in earlier videos, please go ahead and let me know. I see everything, and I encourage you to do that. And I also encourage you to offer any support you can for my channel so that I can build this up and take this to a higher level, which I'd like to do. So until next week, thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you later.